How do you know this place? This place.
I've read both your Dhamma books and listened to your talks.
Oh, okay. Now he wants to see how this place is, huh? It's a different routine, yeah? I mean, here we eat one meal a day, huh? In the morning. And it is freestyle, yeah? University style practice, yeah? So normally we get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah? And then practice until the meal. And then after the meal, you know, we go and practice again until pana, until, you know, having a hot drink, yeah? Until sweeping and having a hot drink, yeah? And after that we practice until 11 o'clock, yeah? I mean, we can practice 1 hour in one row, or 2 hours, or 3 hours, or 4 hours, or 5 hours, yeah? Walk chongkrom, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, yeah? Or even 9 hours. Sometimes I was sitting, you know, from morning 2 o'clock in the morning till 11, yeah? 10 hours, nine, 10 hours in a row, yeah? So, I mean, whatever makes the chitta, you know, calm, yeah? Or when you do the investigation of the body, that's it, yeah? That's our work, yeah? Samatha and vipassana. Samatha, you know, we use the breath, yeah? We use the breath around the tip of the nose, knowing that the breath goes in, knowing that the breath goes out. Yeah? The knowingness is about the breath. That is the important thing. We have to know, yeah, that the breath goes in. In the beginning, if our mind is too disturbed, we can feel it, yeah? We can feel the breath going in and feel breath going out. But when the breath becomes detailed, we have to know the breath goes in. And the knowing becomes much clearer than the feeling of the breath. And when we do that until there is no more thought coming in and no more memories coming up, until the mind is completely calm. And then we go on, yeah, until the breath stops, yeah. And then we jump into that what knows that the breath stopped, yeah? And then the whole universe disappears. Yeah? Everything disappears. Before that, you know, I mean, the body starts to fade away and fade more away until there's only a part of the heart, yeah, that we are still aware of. And then once we jump into this knowingness, I mean, the whole universe disappears. Yeah? That's the first wonder of meditation that we can experience. And it can be important, yeah, but it is difficult. We really need, you know, I mean, to be on our own, you know, and not to take any, not to have any conversations, you know, but constantly from the morning we wake up, you know, until the night we go to bed, be with our Buddha or be with our breath. Yeah? And then sooner or later we can jump into this, deep samadhi, yeah, apana samadhi, yeah, where everything disappears. I mean, this is really a wonder of meditation. We can experience it. Yeah? I mean, if you put our effort into the practice, and then we see, you know, this whole world is made up. Yeah? And when we come back, you know, when we come back out of this knowing, sooner or later we come back. Yeah? Sometimes it lasts only for a short moment. Yeah? That doesn't give us so much of a clue, yeah? But sometimes it lasts for hours, and when we come back we see how the whole universe is created, huh? And that gives us an understanding, that gives us an insight, huh? That all these things are made up. Made up by our mind, yeah? Made up mostly by thoughts, yeah? Thoughts and memories and feelings. I often say that we live in the world, you know. I mean, we live in a world, you know, of what is it? I forgot. Duality, the world of duality, yeah? And our whole language is based on duality. So we cannot describe anything, you know, that is non-dual. And apana samadhi is non-dual because there is knowingness There's this knowingness that doesn't know anything and that doesn't know any object. Huh? It's combined. It's unified. It's non-dual. Yeah? When we come back, you know, everything is dual. There's a knowingness of object. Yeah? We know the breath. You know, we know the feeling. We know the memories. Yeah? We know even consciousness arises in Jesus. We know all these things arises in Jesus. Huh? The five khandhas, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vinyana. The body, you know, the feeling, bodily feeling, mental feeling. Yeah? They arise and cease constantly. And we are attached to them. Yeah? The memories, the thoughts arise and cease. Yeah? Consciousness arises and ceases. And we are attached to them, give meaning to them. And the meaning, you know, the meaning that we give to them, you know, I mean, forms our greed and forms our hatred, yeah? Forms our attachment, yeah? Our positive attachment, yeah? Greed and our hatred and a negative attachment. Some things we don't want, yeah? If we would just stay without, you know, labeling any of these things, yeah? I mean, there is no attachment to it. But the moment we label a word, you know, and say, this is nice, you know, we want it. And this is not nice, we don't want it. Yeah? The moment our labeling starts, yeah, no, I mean our attachment or positive or negative attachment starts. If we just are, yeah, and this we can see, you know, in Upachara Samadhi that comes before the Apana Samadhi, this we can see when there is no thoughts and when there is no memories. We are happy. Whatever happens, we are happy. There are still our feelings, there are still our sounds, yeah? There are no sights because we close our eyes, yeah? But we are happy, yeah? We are contented. We don't want anything, yeah? So, the moment, you know, the moment these thoughts and memories come up, yeah? I mean, attach it to one of the senses, yeah? Then we start to like something and we start to dislike something, yeah? And sometimes we are neutral towards it. These things, we have to see, yeah? I mean, these words, you know, these thoughts, you know, these labels that we put onto things, you know, bring us the whole misery. But in meditation, I mean, we can go back, you know, to the original thing, you know, without, you know, putting labels on it, and just feel the feeling, yeah? And just know the memory, or just know the thought, yeah? Without, you know, without giving any labels on it. Yeah? Seeing, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's just like in programming languages, yeah. We say A plus B is like C is equal to C, yeah. But A, you know, whatever value is in A, we don't know at that time. Or whatever value is in B, we don't know. A is a pointer to the value, yeah. So when we go down and look, you know, what it points to, then we know what is in there, yeah? So when we say love, you know, I mean, then we go, you know, and find out, what does it point to, yeah? What is the feeling that is behind it, or what is behind it? What is the value of it, yeah? I mean, the real value, not just the word, yeah? I mean, we are so taken by these words, we are so taken by these symbols, and we give so much meaning to these symbols, huh? That we get completely confused, yeah? We think this is real, yeah? But is it real? Yeah. I mean, the moment we go and look for the values of it, yeah? What does it mean? How does it feel? Hatred, yeah? How does it feel? Lust. How does it feel? Yeah? Longing, yeah? How does it feel? Greed, yeah? Whatever it is, yeah? And then how does it compare, yeah? How does it compare, you know, for the feeling of fear, you know, to the feeling of hate, yeah, or dislike, huh? How do the feelings compare? Huh? Huh? I mean, we just put a label on and then that's it, yeah? That's a reality for us. Huh? And then we live in this reality, in this virtual reality. Yeah? I mean, we could call it actually, it's a virtual reality because it's not real. Huh? We created it and we abide by its rules, yeah? But a lot of our misunderstandings or miscommunications, you know, are based on these, yeah? That people attach different values to these, to the same words, yeah? And then we miscommunicate. Yeah? then we misunderstand each other. That is the problem. We should really go into, and see what it is. What is the body? For instance, what is the body? What is it made of? Take it out, take the things out, put it in front of you, put each of the body parts in front of you and look at it, And which body part is actually the body? Is the brain the body? Is the skull the body? Is the bone the body? Is the nervous system the body? What is the body? It's a construct, Like so many things in our world, are constructs. And we go for these constructs and build even more complicated constructs onto them. For instance, body, we say, okay, this is a female body and this is a male body. So we build onto these constructs and get completely fooled by it, completely taken in by it. So, meditation is to disassemble all these things, and look for what it is really beneath it. And for that we need to have sati. And sati is this knowingness that we have to develop. The sati that we develop, knowing that the breath goes in, knowing that the breath goes out, knowing that the breath is deep, knowing that the breath is shallow. What is now? What is today? People getting sick. This knowingness we have to develop. Knowing each time, knowing when the in-breath starts, knowing when the in-breath stops, knowing when the in-breath is at its height, knowing that it is deep, knowing that it is shallow, This knowingness, this sati, we have to develop. Without sati, we don't have. Lungda Mahabhoa called sati, sati panya, sati and wisdom. This knowingness and wisdom, are the only weapons to fight against the kilesa. So we have to develop it, sati. It's this awareness. It's not mindfulness, it's a wrong translation. Mindfulness, being mindful of one thing. Sati is mind emptiness. The mind is completely empty, it just knows. It's not occupied with anything, it just knows. And this sati we have to develop. Without it, we will not be able to do any kind of contemplation, any kind of investigation without the sati. Because the sati has to look at things, has to see. And Panya is asking the question. What is the body? Which part of the body? That is what was Panya doing, asking the question. When the food goes in, where is the taste? Where does the taste end? That's what Panya asked. No matter what, the moment it leaves our tongue, there is no taste. So every kind of food is fine. We have to see that. We have to ask these questions, to understand it. And why is when the food is going in, it is delicious, and when it goes out, it smells, dirty. We don't want to put it into our hands, or we don't want to smell it, or we don't want to taste it. Why? These questions we have to ask. Why everything that gets into the contact with the body gets dirty and stained and soiled? Why is that? Before that they were not stained and soiled, but the moment they get in contact, be it our clothes, be it the food, we don't have to digest the food yet, we just keep it in our mouth and spit it out, and we don't like to eat it again, because it has been soiled by our body. So why do we love this body so much when everything it does is soil everything? Or sometimes, like I call it, it's a chemical factory that turns everything that is nice and pleasant into something that is disgusting. Look at the smell that comes out, of our body, after digestion. You like to breathe it, you like to make a perfume out of it, it smells nice. To understand the nature of the body, and to see our attachment. It is the most important toy of the kilesa. And that's what we have to destroy. We have to destroy our illusion about the body that it is something nice, that it's something fantastic, that is something, we love so much that life after life after life after life, we want one, Why do we want one? These are the questions. Why do we attach so much to the body? To the human body, or to the animal body, or to the ghost body, or to the hell, or to the deva body? They're all, most of the beings do have bodies. Why do we attach to it? Why do we attach to all these things? This is the first, the first kind of investigation we have to do until we can overcome greed and hate. Because greed and hate have only one thing, they are all connected to this body. Our likes and our dislikes are all connected with the body. The feelings, the bodily feelings, we like it or we dislike it. And the things we like about the skin, or being young, or being this, the smell of it, it's all our likes, all our greed and hate, are connected with the body. Because once the body investigation is over, there is no greed and hatred anymore, and then we only have to deal with delusion. This is the most difficult thing. We think already the body investigation is difficult. But this, to find out, to investigate delusion, it is much more difficult. People, especially people from the West, who always want to investigate delusion. But if they would understand, or conceit, or things like that, all these mental factors, we are brought up, thinking mentally, we are not even aware of the body, So people, who come and sit in meditation after 2 or 3 days, they suddenly become, I have a body, this hurts and that hurts, this is in pain, that is in pain, this is not comfortable, that is not comfortable. Before we were always in our ivory tower, in our mental capabilities. And then when we meditate, we realize, we do have a body, and it is painful, And then we fight, with the pain. What is pain? We don't even know what pain is, We label it pain, we label it fear, and then it's gone. It's over for us, Investigation, there's no more investigation, The moment we label something, no more investigation, because we know it already, We don't know a thing. We don't know how fear feels. We don't know how pain really feels. We have to investigate these things. Not only the body, but also this. We have to sharpen our wisdom, through investigation. What is pain? Where is it? And when we look at, is it within the body? So is it in the skin? Is it in the flesh? Is it in the tendons? Is it in the muscles, Where is it? Is it in the bones? Where is it? Because the moment we get up, the pain is gone. What kind of pain is this? If you cut yourself with a knife, there is pain, no matter if you stand up, if you lie down, or if you, if you sit, The pain is there, this is really physical pain, but the pain, when we do meditation, there's no physical pain, it's just pain, but we get excruciating pain, We break our back, we break our legs, we break our knees, we ruin our body, just after 30, 40 minutes, When we sit in the plane from Canada to Thailand, 11 hours, we don't ruin our body, we don't get, There's no pain, So what is pain, This is an investigation. We have to understand. We have to understand the nature of pain. And when we become close to the truth of pain, you know, I mean, then the pain shifts from one point to the next. Then we go there and do the same question. You know, where is the pain? What is pain? You know, how does it feel? Is it point-wise? Is it area-wise? Is it constant or is it anicca? Yeah, is it constantly changing? Yeah. Until we find out where the pain is actually coming from. Yeah. So we have to follow, yeah? We have to follow the pain, you know, from one point to the next point to the I mean, maybe it starts in the right knee and then it goes to the left knee, then it goes to the back, then it goes to the neck, then it goes to the head, or then, yeah, and follow it until it shows us where it's actually coming from. And then we have understood, you know, understood the first part, yeah, of the investigation of pain. To understand, you know, to thoroughly understand pain, then we have to go through these three stages of death, yeah? Pain of death. Yeah? But that is more, yeah? The first part is already difficult, so I don't need to talk about the three stages of death. Yeah? So that is how we investigate. We don't take things for granted. Yeah? Is that understood? We don't take things for granted. Yeah? So if the Kilesa tells us this is this, then we question, what is this? Yeah? Huh? How does it feel like? Yeah? This is change. Is it anicca, anatta, dukkha? Yeah? Find out, you know, wisdom is something creative. Yeah? It asks the right question. Huh? Not why did the pain come? Why is never the right question. Yeah? It leads us to thinking. Yeah? As I said, you know, we are in our mental faculties, yeah? Huh? I didn't end it, you know? I mean, we are born, you know, we are born and raised in the West, you know, and the only thing, you know, most probably the only thing that we were educated is in our mental faculties, yeah? Now we have to come down, yeah? And so if we want to investigate conceit, you know, or if we want to investigate the mental faculties, I mean, we are still opposed by the most fundamental, and that is the body faculties, yeah? The greed and hate, yeah? When you look at it, yeah? When we talk about, you know, the three armies of the Kilesas are greed, hatred, and delusion, yeah? Greed and hatred are in the foreground. These we have to battle first, yeah? When you look at the path, you know, to deliverance, to the end of dukkha, I mean, greed and hate goes first, and then comes delusion, yeah? So delusion we cannot see as long as there is greed and hatred, yeah? I mean, how can we tackle delusion without, you know, without overcoming greed and hate, yeah? Understood? Just a short talk, yeah, today, yeah. I mean, there are some questions, yeah. Are there some questions from the audience? And then please, yeah. No questions, and you know, then read out.
I did have the experience in meditation that the bright light emerged and I dissolved. Only light was present, but I got scared and I opened my eyes to take a very deep breath. I realized that there is no self. The body is just a projected form and the silent observer is an unconditional, unchanging, spacious light sense felt inside what it reflects on everything perceived. Please guide me through my journey.
This is difficult. I mean, I need to talk to this person, you know, I mean, to see what is made up, what is contoured up, yeah, and what is real. I can't see it from his writing, but I, but my feeling is that most of it is contoured up, you know, I mean, knowing the text, knowing the Buddha's, the suttas of the Lord Buddha, knowing about selflessness, it is contoured up. The only thing what I can talk about is the white light, yeah? He has to bring it within his heart, yeah? When he sees the bright light, he should not be scared, you know? I mean, it is a sign of concentration, and the stronger the concentration, the brighter the light, yeah? And then bring it into the heart, because it tends to go outside, yeah? So bring it into the heart, you know, and, you know, it's just like a flashlight and light out, you know, and see what is in the heart, yeah? I mean, Not the physical heart, you know, the citta. I'm talking about the citta. So, next question.
How to reflect on death and overcoming the fear to prepare oneself for death at different levels of practice? The person lists five different levels.
Five different levels of practice?
Yeah, it's basically from...
I know only one level of practice.
Yeah, from having faith in the triple chamber, not yet meditating all the way to having samadhi like lungda.
Oh. I mean...
Everything.
And contemplating death, you know, and Lord Buddha talked about it, I mean, Maranasati, yeah? Thinking about death, yeah, thinking about we are born. This we can remember, yeah, more or less, yeah, and then we look at our parents, then we look at our grandparents, you know, and we see people die, yeah. That is the first thing, to realize the truth, yeah, sooner or later we are going to die, yeah? And we are going to die, you know, we can die a nice death, you know, a not so painful death, or we can die a very painful death. That's a reflection that we can take. I mean, to the stages, yeah, I mean, it gets deeper and deeper, you know, over the different levels, you know, and the last is, you know, investigating the stages, the pain of death, yeah. I was talking about it just before, yeah, investigating the stages of death. But you have to have sati, you know, I mean to go, yeah, to go actually to the stage where the breath stops, you know, where somebody, you know, I mean, somebody, you know, I mean, pushes you against the wall and you can't breathe anymore, everything breaks. Yeah? And then the next stage, you know, is the stage of fire, you know, the whole body is on fire, all the elements within the realm of the body are on fire, yeah? Yeah? And then, you know, the last stage of death where all the elements that are connected or combined, you know, and build our body, are getting disconnected, or ripped apart, yeah? These are the three stages of death, yeah, three pains of death. Yeah? And it happens, sooner or later it happens to a to a practitioner, I mean, who is ready for that, yeah? I mean, you cannot force this on, yeah? I mean, first of all, you have to understand pain, what is pain, yeah? And go through investigation of pain, like I described before, yeah? Before you actually can, yeah? Go through the three stages of death. Okay, next question.
Bisher war ich sicher, dass uns während der Meditation und auch danach die Devas und auch die Kraft, die sich entwickelt, vor Angriffen von Dämonen schützen, als Nebenwirkung sozusagen. Beziehungsweise diese Dinge vermeiden sich automatisch von selbst durch eine korrekte Lebensausrichtung mit Sila, Meditation und so weiter. Als sie nun die Angriffe der Dämonen ansprachen und auch, dass diese Mönche oder andere ehrliche Praktizierende treffen kann, scheint es, dass meine Ansicht falsch ist.
Die Ansicht ist falsch und ist richtig. Ne? Auf der einen Seite ein Leben in Tugend, ne, schützt uns, ne, kann uns vor solchen Dingen schützen, aber es kann uns nicht vor unserem Karma schützen. Und das Karma, ne, das wir in den früheren Leben gemacht haben, kann zu all diesen Formen führen. Ich habe nicht gesagt, dass das jeden Meditierenden trifft, sondern es ist eine Ausnahme. Ne? Es kann Leute treffen. Vor allem trifft es aber natürlich auch Leute, die im normalen Leben stehen. Ne? Wenn ich früher ein Dämon gewesen bin und habe andere Leute, ne, habe die Körper von anderen Leuten übernommen, ne? Ja, dann wird es irgendwann zu mir zurückkommen. Ja? Was auch immer wir getan haben, was auch immer du anderen antust, ne, wird dir wieder angetan werden. Sei es im Guten oder sei es im Bösen. Und egal, ob das ein guter Meditierender ist oder ein schlecht Meditierender ist, ob das ein Tugendhafter ist oder ein Nicht-Tugendhafter, das Karma kommt wieder zu uns zurück. Ne? Und es kommt zu seiner Zeit zurück. Ne? Das ist die einzige Antwort, die ich darauf habe. Ne? Die Devas können uns vor solchen Geistern nicht beschützen. Das sind nämlich, das sind hungrige Geister, ne? Oder Geister, im Thai haben sie einen speziellen Ausdruck, Pising, ne? Geister, die andere, ja, possessed, ich weiß nicht, wie man das im Deutschen sagt, possessed beings, ja. Ja, also im 16. Jahrhundert kennt man das doch, ne? Aus der christlichen Kirche, Exorzismus, ne? Die Geister austreiben. Ne? Es ist jetzt, das ist seit dem 18., seit der Aufklärung gibt es nicht mehr, ne? Ja, jedenfalls in unserer Vorstellung gibt es nicht mehr, aber in der Wirklichkeit gibt es. Also, was auch immer sein Karma ist, nicht? Irgendwo früher oder später wird er das erleben. Alles klar, nächste Frage.
Anger appears to flare up, then pass, but it's still deeply rooted. The same with lust. Asupa seems to work only as a temporary solution. I'm getting frustrated and feel I'm artificially repressing emotions. How does one permanently let go?
You cannot permanently let go. Yeah? Frustrated. Of course, Asupa is, yeah. It is a tool, yeah, to overcome lust, yeah, for that moment, yeah. But if we, what is? What?
He stopped.
Okay. I mean, it wasn't a charge.
It was an AC.
What?
It was an AC.
I mean, what is wrong with her? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Where was that? What?
I saw it difficult fast lighting. You cannot permanently let go.
That was a teaching I got in the West, and that's why I came to Thailand. Yeah? I mean, when I asked, you know, how to overcome greed and hatred or lust, you know, I mean, they said, don't dive into it. Yeah? I said, you know, this won't work, yeah? I mean, I can restrain myself from not going into these things, but they don't go away, yeah? And then I came to Thailand and Lungta said, no, I mean, in the West, you know, they have this concept of letting go, yeah? And then he brought up, you know, the aunt, you know, that is on the roof, yeah? And wants to go to the floor, yeah? I mean, all what it needs is let to go, yeah? But it doesn't know the command, let go. It only knows the command, you know, to make one step forward, yeah, or to make one step backward, yeah. So it goes up to the end, you know, and then goes down, you know, until it goes to the floor. Yeah? And that is the same thing with our super practice. I mean, yes, in the beginning we use a super practice, you know, to counteract extreme lust, yeah. But the more a super practice we do, yeah, if we see really the filth of the body, if we really see the body disintegrate and see the connection with the body of lust and greed, lust and hate, yeah? I mean, then, through investigation, yeah, the thing is gone, yeah? If you use it wisely, you know, if you use wisdom, you know, in sati, and investigate the body thoroughly until we see, yeah, until we see there is nothing, yeah, there is nothing of it, yeah? Because, like I said before, you know, I mean, greed and hatred are in connection with the body only, yeah. And once with the investigation of the body is over, I mean, there's no greed and hatred anymore, and there's no lust. But the first thing is, I mean, all our life, we were running after the nice things, yeah? And we were avoiding all these unpleasant things, yeah? And now we have to, yeah, that the scale is completely out of balance, yeah? I mean, we only look for the nice things, yeah? We don't want to see the ugly things. We don't want to see the ugly side, yeah? And now what we do with the asupa practice is bringing up the ugly side, yeah, until the scale is balanced, yeah, until we can see both, yeah, no? how it arrives, you know, how it greed arrives, how hate arrives, you know, until they are completely balanced, yeah, and then we can see it, and we can walk through the middle, of greed and hate, yeah, Whereas greed is on one side and hate is on one side, in the middle it is completely balanced. This is just as a simile. Yeah? Okay, next question. No more questions? Well, that's good. Yeah? All awake? Questions from the audience? No? And then we can go back to practice, yeah? Yeah? Where's David staying? Which Kuti? Kuti Cliff is a little... Who's staying in Kuti Cliff?
Now it's raining.
It's just for 2 days, you know, I mean, it will be dry up, yeah. I mean, he can decide, yeah, because Kuti View doesn't have a Chonkron path, yeah. Kuti Cliff has its own Chonkron path in front of the Kuti, yeah. Show him tomorrow, you show him Kuti Cliff, yeah.
The one in Kuti View is probably longer when you just walk into Kuti than the one in Kuti
Cliff. The Kuti Cliff is much longer. Anyway, it's up to him, yeah. Walking meditation is very important, yeah? And about walking meditation. When we do walking meditation, we walk normally. We don't walk slowly, yeah? And you will see, and there's a reason behind that. The faster we do walking meditation, the less we have to concentrate the rest of the citta that does the walking meditation onto the Buddha or onto the breath. So the easier it is actually to get calm. Yeah? The slower we walk, the more the tendencies of the mind to go astray. Yeah? And the faster we walk, there are less tendencies to go astray. Yeah? That's why we normally do normal walking meditation or sometimes fast. You know, when your mind is really disturbed, then you do really fast walking meditation until the mind gets calm. And then automatically the walking, you know, is slower, it gets slower by itself, yeah? But it never gets really slow. The same thing is, you know, I mean, we can listen to talks, you know, when we sit in samadhi, you know, we can listen to talks, yeah? And then just listen, yeah? Not trying to understand what is said, but listening with the heart. That also leads very, very, very fast to calm, yeah? To a peaceful state of mind. Yeah? Okay? Understood?